Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will discuss the first ever global campaign to improve access to assistive technology. Our guest is Pascal Beigelevel, CEO of AtScale, the global partnership for assistive technology. Later in the program, we'll have our exclusive interview with Mark Sussman, CEO of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, on the foundation's annual letter. But first, Zimbabwe has kicked off a vaccination campaign against cholera on Monday to rein in a worsening outbreak of the disease that the government said has killed more than 400 people. The World Health Organization says the Southern African country received the first batch of almost 900,000 vaccines last week. On Monday, government officials have started administering the first doses in Kuadzana, a suburb of Harare, the capital, and one of the hardest hit areas. Cholera is contracted from bacteria generally transmitted through contaminated food or water. Zimbabwe has been battling the current outbreak since February last year. It has reported more than 20,000 suspected cases and 400 deaths, of which 71 have been confirmed by laboratory tests. Now, a new global campaign was launched recently at the World Economic Forum in Davos, calling for urgent action to improve access to assistive technologies for millions of people around the world. The campaign, Unlock the Everyday, aims to raise awareness of everyone's right to assistive technology. It is estimated that 2.5 billion people today need at least one form of assistive technology. Joining us via phone from Geneva for more is Pascal Beigelevel, CEO of AtScale, the global partnership for assistive technology. Mr. Beigelevel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good evening.
Good evening. First of all, let me ask you this. What are assistive technologies? When I think about it, I think walkers, I think canes, but there's more to it than that, right?
That's right, Leonard. Assistive technology really is an umbrella term that refers to a range of devices that we all need to be functional. Eyeglasses is assistive technology. Hearing aids, wheelchairs, prosthetics, even digital devices. Your smartphone is an assistive technology. And so in that sense, assistive technology really concerns everyone. Sometimes we think that this is just for people living with a disability. They, of course, often need more than one form of assistive technology, but it's also for older persons, victims of conflict, and many others. Someone like myself, who, you know, I could not drive or do my job without my eyeglasses.
Interesting. And it's very interesting to see the variety, the diverse range of devices that fall under the umbrella of assistive technologies. And when you say smartphone, how are smartphones assistive technologies?
So it's the functionalities that come with smartphones. So the ability to do captioning text-to-speech or magnifying text. And then all the apps that are on your smartphone that are being developed today that serve as assistive technology. For example, the ability to have remote sign language and translation in sign language.
Very interesting. And when we look at the way technology has advanced, has evolved, how do you see that shaping this industry?
So I think we're really at the cusp of you know, seeing a huge increase in the potential that technology can bring for people who need assistive technology. There's and digital is an important one. Things like smartphones, of course. We're also looking closely at artificial intelligence as well, and what opportunities that may bring. Although I think that in this particular context, maybe a bit further down the road. But innovation is not just about digital aspects. There's a lot of innovation happening around local production and local innovations the challenge, though, is getting investment to move from a prototype or even sometimes a proven innovation, a product that's been developed, into the market. There are still too few investors ready to back up these novel ideas.
Let's talk about access. We see that there are some types of assistive technologies that many people who need them do not have access to, especially when we look at low and middle income countries. Talk to us about this challenge. What are some of the major barriers to widespread accessibility of assistive technology, and what regions are most affected by disparities in access?
So let me start by that last point, and then I'll come to some of the barriers. If we look at the numbers today, and our partners WHO and UNICEF published the first global report on assistive technology last year, it shows clearly the disparity between high-income countries and lower and middle-income countries. In high-income countries, 90% of people have access to assistive technology on average. In low-income countries, that number is as low as 10%. In some countries, it goes even down to 3% in access. So we're really talking about many of the countries in Africa, countries in parts of Asia and Latin America as well. Now, why are we seeing such a low coverage despite the massive needs? The main reason, first of all, is lack of awareness at all levels. People do not realize what's out there, what's possible, and that it is a right that they must demand access to assistive technology. And this happens at all levels, from the users, their family members, the community, all the way up to the political decision makers who have this lack of awareness and understanding. Secondly, the lack of funding. These are sometimes expensive products. If you take a high-quality wheelchair, at the lowest cost in currently low middle income markets, emerging markets, there's $250 for a wheelchair, which is out of reach for many people who have to pay out of pocket. And governments are today not funding assistive technology to the extent that they should. And a third barrier is lack of human resources, because it's not only about the product, it's also about the services that come with it. Most of these assistive technologies need to be individually fitted. You just can't pick up any pair of eyeglasses and put them on. You need to have your eyes tested and so forth. And the same goes for wheelchairs or a prosthetic leg. And so you need competent, skilled human resources, professionals, to be able to provide the assistive technology. So there's a lot of work to do, but the good news is that we know what needs to get done. There are solutions. What we need is more political will and more financing to support this agenda.
Now, there is this campaign, Unlock the Everyday, as I mentioned earlier, that was launched. Why was it important to launch the campaign, and how is the campaign tailored to addressing the diverse needs of individuals with disabilities across different regions of the world and address the needs of access, more access?
So this has been an issue that's been neglected and under-resourced for far, far too long, despite it being, a human right. It's the right thing to do to invest in, and it's a smart thing to do as well. It is, there's a return on investment. In fact, we estimate it's a ninefold return on investment. So it makes economic sense to actually invest in assistive technology. But it's, despite that, has been neglected. So we're bringing attention to that. Secondly, we're halfway through the Sustainable Development Goals, on our way to 2030. One of the fundamental premises is leaving no one behind. But how can we ever reach that promise without inclusive societies? And we can't have inclusive societies without assistive technology. No one should be excluded from work because they don't have a wheelchair to leave the house, or excluded from school because they can't see the blackboard properly or hear what the teacher is saying for a lack of a hearing aid. And lastly, not least, today's world is more divided than ever. And AT assistive technology is all about inclusion. And the needs for AT and therefore broader inclusion are only growing in particular because of the terrible conflicts that we're seeing raging across the world today. And so we want to bring more attention to this and calling on everyone to get behind this movement to unlock the everyday for millions of people.
What will success look like for this campaign? What metrics or indicators will be used to measure the success and impact of the campaign?
So our goal as a partnership, the AT Scale partnership, which is a public-private partnership, by the way, bringing together a lot of different stakeholders, is to catalyze action to reach 500 million people by 2030. And this campaign is a key effort to really increase that momentum to help us get there. And in the more immediate term, we're looking to see increased commitments from the private sector to make their products, for example, more affordable in lower-income countries. We're looking for increased government commitment to increase their budgets and to include, for example, assistive technology in health insurance schemes or social benefit packages. We're going to be looking to see whether we're seeing an increase in demand for these products. And then one other marker that we're looking to see in terms of political will is, working towards a resolution at the United Nations General Assembly as a testimony and a commitment, political commitment, to do more in this area.
One of the challenges often cited in the cost is the cost of assistive technologies. What initiatives or approaches are being explored to make these technologies more affordable, especially when we talk about regions where people live in poverty or have limited resources?
So we're really trying to look at this from all angles, and I'll name a couple. Local production is one. We know that today, 80% of assistive technology is actually manufactured in places like China. And so for those products to get to the end users, it requires a lot of costs, and transportation is a big one of those. So local production is one effort that we're supporting to make these products more accessible. Leveraging technology is another one. 3D printing, for example, is an opportunity to be able to produce some of these assistive technologies closer to the client and at a cheaper cost. Or telemedicine is another opportunity that we have to bring services closer to the patient and reduce costs, such as transport costs. It's also about shaping the market, so trying to make those products overall cheaper. So, for example, working with one of our key partners, UNICEF, they 2 years ago launched a tender for hearing aids to secure long-term agreements with manufacturers of hearing aids. And by doing so, prices were reduced tenfold from an average of $1,000 for a hearing aid to about $100 for a hearing aid. So all of these are different. We're also looking at tariffs and import barriers, for example, which is also driving up costs. So we're looking at this from multiple different angles. It won't happen overnight. It is a journey, but we're going to get there.
And speaking of actions, talk to us about the mission of AtScale. And can you share any success stories or notable achievements that have already been realized through the organization?
So we're relatively new, but nevertheless, we already have, I think, a number of things to show for. For example, and this is all efforts that are helping us move towards this broader goal of reaching 500 million people by 2030 as a partnership, which, again, I'll remind everyone, is really made up of public and private sector actors, WHO, UNICEF, the International Disability Alliance, the Global Disability Hub, organizations of people with disabilities, AT users, et cetera, et cetera. Now, some examples. We supported, for example, an effort in Ukraine back in 2022 at the onset of the conflict there to make assistive technology more available to populations that had been displaced by the conflict by bundling AT kits. And we catalyzed that approach in partnership with the World Health Organization and now that has been able to reach greater scale. We're working, for example, in Rwanda, helping them bring to scale a hearing aid program, which they had started to pilot, and now with our support, they're able to reach a much larger part of the country. We've introduced new languages for text-to-speech functionalities on smartphones and tablets. We launched, for example, a few months ago, the Kazakh language. We've developed an investment case to support advocacy efforts at country level that are needed to convince, for example, ministries of finance to invest in assistive technology. And we're leveraging more resources. Since we started our operations just over 2 years ago, we've managed to already double the commitments of funding from key partners to help support this agenda.
Now, to what extent the design and development of assistive technologies are effectively centered around the needs and preferences of the end users, especially considering the diversity of disabilities and individual requirements?
I'm really glad you asked that question, Leonard. It's so important. In everything that we do, not just the design of assistive technology, is having the assistive technology user be at the center of what we're trying to do. And so user-centered design is, of course, a key principle in involving AT users throughout the whole process. But even more than that, universal design principles, so that when anyone is designing a new technology, a new product, they think about how it can be applied and accessible universally, no matter one's ability. And then considering the different contexts. So it's not just about the different abilities of different people, but it's also the different contexts. Certain wheelchairs need to be adapted for certain, you know, geographical contexts, weather, infrastructure, also thinking about remote locations and so forth. So it's really trying to be flexible, adaptable to the particular needs of different contexts and individuals.
Okay, fantastic. And we have to leave it there. Pascal Bijlevel, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you. Very much appreciated. Thank you.
That was Pascal Bijlevel, CEO of AtScale, the global partnership for assistive technology. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has unveiled its annual letter for 2024, highlighting some important challenges such as the rise of extreme poverty since the COVID-19 pandemic and a decrease in development assistance. Authored by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation CEO Mark Sussman, the letter reflects a commitment to addressing complex global issues through innovative solutions and partnerships, and calls on philanthropists to give more and give now to meet the unprecedented challenges nations across the globe face in combating poverty, eradicating disease, and fighting inequality. I spoke with Mark Sussman, CEO of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Take a listen.
Well, we're very troubled because this is a drop of aid at a time when needs have increased significantly, in part due to the aftermath of COVID, where African countries already had fewer resources available to deal with COVID than many high-income countries did, used them effectively. But now, as we try and turn to correcting for some of the setbacks that we've seen in COVID, in this time of great need, to see high-income countries really reducing their support is very concerning.
Now, during the World Economic Forum in Davos this year, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation announced the foundation's largest annual budget to date. What strategic considerations and priorities are driving this increase?
Yes, well, the biggest is really the reflection both of need that we just discussed, where we have seen some of these setbacks, and we do believe the resources are needed more now than ever. So We want to put our money where our mouth is. And if we're calling on others, on governments and philanthropists to step up and provide more resources, we feel it's important that we lead by example and do that ourselves. And so that's why it's not just an increase year on year, but we've actually increased by a couple of billion dollars over the last 5 years, partly reflecting those challenges. And the kind of areas that we're looking to work on is we do believe it's possible to accelerate progress dramatically through investments that we have made as a foundation and other partners. There are new tools from AI devices that can help with maternal child health care, handheld devices that we can support cheap and usable across the continent of Africa, new treatments for malaria, tuberculosis, new investments and treatment in drought and flood resilient livestock and seeds, smallholder farmers across the continent of Africa, that if we can get those rolled out, we can see huge acceleration in progress, reductions in preventable mortality, increases in agricultural productivity and income generation. And so that's what we're hoping to see and accelerate.
What other insight can you provide into how the incremental resources for 2024 will be distributed across diverse priorities for maximum impact?
Yes, so it's across a range of our work, and we work across health and agricultural development, financial inclusion. We are particularly focused on health partly because that's where we see those needs and opportunities. So some of it is hopefully continuing the fight against polio, where we are the largest funders globally, where Africa has been declared wild poliovirus free, but we do have some vaccine-derived outbreaks across the continent, which we need to tackle with treatments and campaigns that we'll be supporting and increasing our support funding for. There are new treatments being rolled out, for example, higher technology malaria bed nets that are able to deal with mosquitoes that have evolved to be resistant to the first generation of bed nets, which we need to get rolled out at scale. Some of those agricultural interventions I talked about, the climate adaptation, we're expanding those drought-resistant poultry investments across multiple countries, from Nigeria to Ethiopia to Kenya to Zimbabwe. And so we're very excited about those prospects, and that's where a lot of our investments will go. But for us, it's a both and. It's not just about the new money. It's our existing commitments at scale and where we can double down and hopefully become even more effective and impactful.
How does the foundation track and evaluate the impact of its initiatives, and what metrics are used to assess success?
So I always like to say at the foundation that we are about impact first, and impact is measured not by how much money we spend, even if the budget number is the headline, but it's the impact we have in terms of lives saved from preventable death and opportunities provided for the poorest and most vulnerable. So we track that very closely. You track that, for example, do HIV antiretroviral treatments reach the people they need to? Are the prices of those treatments down and effective enough that they can be accessible even to the very poorest? Are vaccines reaching children even in very isolated areas, and we can track them. So, for example, we can have sort of microchips on bed nets in places like in West Africa, where you can make sure the bed nets are being distributed to the areas that are greatest need. So it's very core metrics where you're tracking both the final outcomes, but some of the intermediate metrics of are the tools and products reaching the people they need to.
Now, for many years, the Gates Foundation has worked to address, among other things, health challenges. I mean, you mentioned some of them, maternal and child mortality, especially in low-income countries, Africa being a region that has received a very substantial amount of funding. As science has evolved, innovations are increasingly providing humanity with unique tools to solve complex problems. You mentioned some of them. Could you share a few innovations that can be game changers in providing healthcare in underserved communities?
Well, more than healthcare. So one, everyone's talking about AI these days, but it's mostly about sort of some of the threats to jobs or other. We see a very real concrete set of opportunities in low resource settings. And we recently in Dakar, Senegal, announced what we call a grand challenge. We opened a challenge for people across the world to give us ideas of how they're using AI to advance health and development broadly. And the majority of the successful ones, the ones we thought that were most impactful and provided funding to, came from the continent of Africa. Those include sort of healthcare. It's actually HIV counseling services that AI can do more effectively in South Africa. Their sort of support around low-income medical records keeping across East Africa. Some of those tools we think can be transformative in the short term. But then also it's some of the science that goes. So there are some initial malaria vaccines around, for example, but they have limited effectiveness. You know, currently they're not nearly as effective as, say, the COVID vaccine. We're doing the first trials this year of an mRNA. mRNA was the technology that, you know, transformed the COVID vaccine for malaria. And we're cautiously hopeful that those might become real game changers. There's some great digital public infrastructure tools around digital identity and financial inclusion that we're working on in countries like Kenya, which we think will have a very high impact. So it's an exciting list of long-term innovations, most of them in health, but also in areas from financial inclusion to agricultural development.
This year's annual letter emphasizes the role of philanthropy. How can philanthropy continue to adapt and evolve to meet the changing needs of the continent while ensuring not to overstep the line concerning the role of governments?
That's a very important distinction because we have, say, governments and communities need to be in the driver's seat. That's the only way you get long-term sustainable development impact at scale. And so we're always working to be in alignment with governmental priorities. But what we can then do is take risks that governments can't do. So, for example, I've mentioned potential research into a new malaria vaccine, an mRNA vaccine. We'll also be launching trials on the continent of Africa for the first new tuberculosis vaccine in over 100 years. Those are big risks that governments actually can't afford to tackle. It takes multiple years. It takes, in this case, hundreds of millions of dollars to do the tuberculosis vaccine. But that is exactly the kind of opportunity where I think philanthropy can and should take the risk. It may fail. The private sector is not willing to invest in it because the people who get tuberculosis live in poor countries and won't pay for a potential treatment. But philanthropy can step in and fill that gap. And so I think it's that catalytic risk-taking thing. We can test some of the models for AI and education in low-resource settings. And then if we prove them, we'll turn that government and say, okay, it's your job to scale that up, but we'll take the risk for you. And so I think it's very much a partnership that we want to establish and build on.
Finally, what is the main takeaway from this year's annual letter?
Well, the biggest takeaway is the needs are huge across the global south, especially in Africa. They've become bigger over the last years, but the opportunities are even greater. There are innovations, there are tools, there are technologies, but it needs resources and investments. And while government and the private sector remain critical, we think this is a real moment and a call to action for philanthropists across the continent and around the world to step up and be part of accelerated human progress over the next 5, 10, 15, and 20 years.
And that was Mark Sussman, CEO of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. That's all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mukbil Yabaro and engineer Jumbe Hamza. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.